And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, today is Wednesday, August 16th. I am Gino. I'm here with Darren. Kevin, enjoying some much-needed family time, is not here tonight. So tonight we are two-thirds of the Sports Kings from Queens. You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, send us some posts, send us some thoughts, send us some questions. We want to talk to you. Not a lot going on in sports, but we still want to talk to you. Give us a listen. We're going to talk about some stuff tonight. It's a potpourri night. It's a dead week. Not a lot going on, but some stuff going on. We're going to get it going with the NFL. The New York Jets are on Hard Knocks. Episode 2 was last night. They just signed Dalvin Cook a couple of days later. He's not there. He's not in camp yet. So we haven't seen any Dalvin Cook on Hard Knocks yet. I assume episode 3 will be something about Dalvin Cook signing and coming aboard. Maybe even appearance, but we'll see what happens with that. Last night was interesting. I mean, actually, before we even get to last night, you had to catch up. You didn't see the first episode last week. What do you think, Darren?
Listen, you know what? It's actually pretty cool because Rodgers is actually acting somewhat like one of the guys. They all seem to revere him, and he seems to be helping everybody a little bit. Just seems like offense and defense is just flocking to this guy, just bragging about number 8. Even the, you know, and it was in episode 2 where they say, well, he's our quarterback. He's our quarterback when they're talking about the coaches, about him making perfect throws. Listen, he ain't going to do much if this offensive line doesn't get better, but I do believe it will. I do believe when Brown gets off the pup and that they actually realize that they have to start Becton on the right side, it'll be a little bit easier. But, you know, it's pretty interesting. They didn't do a lot with the rookies last night in the second episode. I thought the first one they had Chaz Surratt pretty well, spoken about. The Sauce Wilson matchup was really fun to watch. Revis and all the stars and Method Man coming, all these guys coming out. I thought it was pretty good.
You're not a Hard Knocks guy normally. Are you at least enjoying it?
I am. Well, listen, it's about my team, which makes it so much easier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just makes it like, well, because I'm so anxious to see what this team's going to do that it means a lot to me.
So episode 2 was last night. I'll give you a little highlights. You can comment as we're going through this. We had some extracurricular activities with these guys. They were a little chippy. You saw them. Little fight broke out a couple of different times. I kind of like seeing it. I kind of like seeing that these guys are a little chippy right now. Quentin Williams at this moment looks like a beast. He looked like a beast during the practice section. And then when they actually got to the pregame, the practice versus Carolina, I loved how he was going 10 sacks. I had 10 sacks.
And then Rodgers goes 11 after he got the next one.
I could have had 10 sacks. And then you see him, in the actual exhibition game in Carolina, and the defense was on fire to me. It looked like
basically it was the two backup ends that really did it. It was Jermaine Johnson and the rookie McDonald that really did it. And wow, they look fast. They look strong. They were going up against the first team offensive line for Carolina, who's not a good team. Let's be honest, is the team that had the first pick in the draft. So they're building, but the Jets couldn't have been more dominant in the preseason game than they were in that game.
We saw a little of the quarterback room last night. Rodgers looks completely engaged in this whole thing right now. I will tell you what I took out of this, and that is watching him throw the ball looks like he has a rocket. He has a gun. And I've known this for a while, but seeing the practice sessions with him just basically flicking his wrist, the ball's just flying down the field into the receiver's hands. It was unbelievable.
He's fully engaged. Then the Hackett signing is huge to keep him in because he seems to love Hackett. So that really makes all the sense in the world for this team to do that. He's got a little frustrated with the O-line, and you could see it a little bit. You saw it a little bit last night. The defense looks really, really strong. The depth on that defensive line is the best in the NFL. I mean, I'm not saying it just because I'm a Jet fan, but that's the best depth of line in the NFL. Because you look at it, Quinnen's only going to play 60-65% of the snaps on the high end, probably 60. Most of the ends are going to be playing 40-50%. So it's not going to be that many snaps. They keep them fresh. That's what Saleh's always done. That's what he brings to the table, is he always shuffles guys in so the defensive line is fresh. The secondary looks solid. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about the team. The O-line's got to get right. Otherwise, nothing matters.
Yeah.
They can't block up front. Nothing matters.
I enjoyed seeing Rodgers talking to the officials in the warm-up game, wherever you want to call it. Yep. Interesting hearing him talking to the officials like that. But again, he's what, a 20-year vet at this point? Around that?
He's 39 years old. He's about 17, 18 years in the league.
I mean,
he knows everybody. He's a four-time MVP. He knows everybody.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing I thought was a little interesting was him touching the dirt. And then he actually told you why, which was because in Green Bay, when it was so cold, he needed to try to get the feel for the ball. So he'd rub some dirt in his hands, but the grass. But just seeing the other guys go, what is he doing? He's grabbing the grass. What is he, checking the wind? It was pretty funny.
I thought the most entertaining part was Mentalist. I thought the Mentalist freaking those guys out was priceless, and it was awesome to watch. It was really freaking cool. I love watching that stuff. I mean, you know, they put like little things around the room that make you think about those numbers or those colors or that stuff. But it doesn't matter. It still impresses the hell out of me.
Yep. Yeah. So the Jets signed Dalvin Cook to a 1-year deal. Mm-hmm. The same afternoon, Breece Hall comes off the PUP list. So the non-Jet fan, which is me, you know, from what we have seen with guys coming off this ACL injury, usually their first 5-6 games specifically are usually not good.
Agreed.
After that, if history tells us anything, there's very few that are actually going to play really well in the first year. So I'll ask you, seeing the signing of Cook, knowing what we know about Breece Hall, listen, went down last year, looked great last year before he went down, but then went down, had to do ACL, sir. So we know all that, but what do you think best case right now for Breece Hall is? I'm going to ask you best case first.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Basically, we saw Saquon, who's a gifted running back, who had to go a whole year where he didn't look like himself, and then last year he became a bit of a dominant force again. I just think that you have to learn to trust in the knee, and I think you have to learn how to recut on that knee and really have faith in it. I don't think it's as quick and easy. It's not just being in football shape. Now you're just retraining your leg to do something that you're not sure it can do. I think that Dalvin Cook is a great signing for the Jets. Knight is a nice player. Carter's a decent player. You know, the kid out of Abedikande is a nice player. The kid out of Pitt. They could all play. They could all play. But what Cook does is it gives you the home run threat that the other three guys don't do. Zonovan Knight's a bruiser. Abedikande's a nice guy, but he's not necessarily a burner. And Michael Carter's a scat back. He's a little guy. So what you love the idea that Dalvin Cook with limited touches.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're talking about Dalvin Cook with 15 touches a game now, and you're hoping that he can break two of them into, you know, 10, 15, 20-yard runs and make something happen. You know, that's really what you're looking for.
Well,
at the same time,
if Dalvin Cook is healthy, you know, this is an all-star. This is not a guy who with five touches is going to do anything. If he's healthy, he's an all-star. That's what he is. He's a Pro Bowler right off the bat. The question for me is that I'm wondering, seeing what we see, what the Jets are really thinking, what they're going to get realistically out of Breece Hall at this point.
Well, Well, I mean, listen, they don't know what they're going to get either, which is why it was so important to make this move.
Right.
The other thing is that this move is also done to keep him away from New England, Miami, and Buffalo as much as to keep him for the Jets. The Jets have enough talent in that backfield room where they would be okay without him. But you don't want him in Buffalo. You don't want him in Miami. And those were the two rumored spots beside this one. New England, I just got to laugh a little bit. Everything's about value for this team. So they sit there and they get Zeke six while the Jets pay 8.4. The Patriots needed Cook more than the Jets did.
Yeah.
Zeke is definitely on the backside. I'm not saying he's awful or horrendous or anything like that, but Zeke's like signing Frank Gore here in the last 5-6 years. He's like signing an older guy that can they're never gonna fumble it, gonna get you big first downs and get his nose ahead, but he has no ability to break it, and he just doesn't have that same cutting ability and that speed off the cut like he once did. And he doesn't have the offensive line either anymore. So it was just the Jets got the better play. This is not something Jet fans are used to. We have the quarterback that could be the best in the division. May not be. Maybe Allen. Some people might like Tua still. But I think he's right there with Josh Allen. Probably more accurate. But at the same time, not as young. So you want to see how it holds up. He doesn't have the ability to scramble the way he does. And you have the a real top-notch wide receiver in Garrett Wilson. He's not the best in the division either because Tyreek Hill is better. Stephon Diggs is more proven and better. Even Waddle might be better. Yeah. But the Jets do have a number one receiver, right? So now you have that, and you have all these running backs, a stable of running backs that is probably the best in the division. Ramondre might be the best overall back overall if you look at it if Hall's not healthy. But the Jets are solid all the way through. And it's very interesting to see them with skill position players like this.
My gut tells me because they gave Cook a 1-year deal that as long as they think that he can take it, I have a feeling he's going to get a huge workload specifically at the beginning of the season. And then as this goes on, I only say this because we've seen running backs prior coming off this injury, what they give, what they're able to produce. And I mean, look back at the stuff. It's not great stats. Stat wise, it's
Adrian Peterson is the only one that we ever saw that really kind of did it. That didn't look like he skipped that much of a beat, you know?
Right. Early on, I think and I'm assuming Breece Hall in this discussion, I'm assuming Breece Hall is healthy to start week one. I'm assuming it's basically Dalvin Cook at maybe 75% of the snaps at the beginning, and I'll use easy numbers, and it's the first four games. And then games 5 to 8, it may be Dalvin Cook at 65%. And then I think after game 8, it's what does Breece Hall look like? How much can he give us? And from that point on, then you may see that percentage shift, from 65 Cook to maybe 65 Breece Hall. But I think I get the feeling that's the way this is going to look specifically for the first 8 games. I can't imagine the first 4, it's not 75%, 25% in Cook's favor, because if they have any doubts, this is when they're going to test that, make it test. They're going to test Breece out. And even if he feels a tinge, he's off the field right away, and that's what the Cook signing does. It gives you that ability and protection not to push Breece Hall. So what do you think?
Well, here's the thing. The one thing that goes against Cook a little bit, he's not great in pass protection. Okay. It's just not his skill set. When you look at the stats, they say he's okay. But when you really break it down against the other running backs, he's in the bottom quarter of running backs in pass protection. This is not going to be a passing team as much as they are a running team. So it's not going to play as heavily as it did sometimes in Minnesota, but the fact of the matter is that I think you'll see Knight a little bit more than you do, because I think Zonovan Knight is capable, especially with Hall coming off the injury, of being the guy that pass protects. I think Carter his game, but he's small. So I think that Knight could be the guy that we see a little bit more. So if you're going to ask me, I think it's going to be a three-back rotation more than a two. I do think Cook will be the starter.
Yeah,
I do think Cook will, get 50% of the workload, maybe even 55. But I think that you'll see Knight for at least a series every three, and I think that you'll see Breece Hall in there for certain situations. Just to let him practice cutting. That's just what I take on that. But
You mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. He signs with the Patriots. The Patriots have Ramondre Stevenson, who they're probably going to give the bulk of the workload to. I think you're going to see Zeke maybe 5, 6, 7 times a game. You may see him do the goal line stuff. If you're looking at a fantasy aspect, I think Ezekiel Elliott is definitely going to steal a lot of goal line carries. And I think what it's going to do is prevent them from overusing Ramondre, because I think that's the direction that a lot of people, including myself, thought this was going with before the Ezekiel Elliott signing. So we'll see what happens with that.
My take on that again is that Bill Belichick's still trying to outsmart everybody, but it's not, you don't look as smart when you don't have Tom Brady behind center.
Absolutely.
And you know what? Tom Brady can allow you to sit there and make moves. And listen, I'm not Kevin where I wish the guy ill, but I'm not a Tom Brady guy. I've hated watching him play against my team for years. That'll never change. But the fact of the matter is that Tom Brady can mask a lot of little situations that aren't right about your team just because of his mind and a quick release and knowing what to do and knowing how to audible the right way and all that fun stuff. I think that Zeke is, at this stage of his career, he's a backup running back right now. Everybody now through the roof just in fantasy is thinking Pollard. It's going to explode. I hear his name as the running back to watch more than any other. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing.
I am.
But it seems like everybody's on the Tony Pollard bandwagon. Now, we don't know if Pollard could take the full load either. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see with that too. But I think that New England's trying to cheap out again. Their defense is really good, but they have no money committed to that offense. It's almost like they don't want Mac Jones to be that successful.
It's a good point. As far as New England, they brought in Juju Smith-Schuster, but I mean, that's basically all you see there. And, as far as what you're going to see with Dallas, after Pollard, if they're throwing the ball, they got some good receivers. They got Lamb. They'll use Gallup. They just brought in Cooks. They'll use Cooks out there. But, Pollard's going to see a lot of work, and he's going to see a lot of goal line work too with Zeke gone. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think he could be in for a good season. I think Dallas is going to be pretty good. I think what's going to happen with Pollard is how much is Dallas throwing the ball. I think that changes what his usage is, what his workload is for a fantasy aspect, what kind of points he can put up if he's only getting, 15 carries a game, basically, because they're throwing the ball so much.
I agree.
Other NFL, we saw basically all three rookie quarterbacks get named starters: Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, Bryce Young in Carolina, C.J. Stroud in Houston. Darren, any thoughts on the rookies?
I'm not sold on Richardson. I don't think Carolina has much of a choice but to go with the first pick of the draft. And I didn't think he looked bad against the Jets. He didn't play for long. He was trying to stand in there. He was getting hit. He got rocked a couple of times. Stroud did not look good in his debut. But, you draft these guys high, you invest in them, and you throw them on the field, and you see what you got. And a lot of these guys haven't been making it lately, let's be honest.
There's a lot of bust out. Stroud's in Houston, Bryce Young's in Carolina, and we know those teams are not going to be good. We know they're not going to be good. And then Anthony Richardson's in Indianapolis, who we really don't know if they're going to be good or not. And at this moment, still have a running back issue with Taylor. The other running back issue is still out there with Vegas with Josh Jacobs. We don't know what direction those two are still going in at the moment. So he's got his work cut out for him. You know, the best comparisons that I heard made were is that he's almost like Justin Fields. Well, if that's the case, we saw what Fields was his first year, and he wasn't great for, you know, 10 games in a row. Granted, he got thrown into the job in week 4 or 5, whatever it was. But, you know, he didn't light the world on fire until year 2. So we got to see what's going to happen with Richardson. So
Richardson was not the college player that Fields was either. Right. I mean, putting them in the same – I mean, listen, it's all about look. It's all about what they think that the guy can do capability-wise based on athletic ability. But the fact of the matter is Fields had a much better college career than Richardson. So to put them in the same vein, I don't think is even fair.
I think the main comparison they were making was is that Richardson is going to run the way you saw Justin Fields run last year, where basically he's going to run for 50, 60 yards every game without a doubt. Now, listen, if he's not great, he may only throw for 100 yards, which is not going to help the team either. So,
but the amount of bad mistakes that this kid could make because he's on the run all the time is not. Listen, I think that I wouldn't have started him. Out of the three, he was the guy I thought was least ready.
Okay.
I don't think it's even that close. I don't think I'll be stunned if he's starting on this league in 3 years. I don't think he's a player.
Okay. All right. Any other news around the NFL, Darren?
Just Alex Collins getting killed in the motorcycle crash. Yeah. 28 years old. He played. He had a decent career, but you know, unfortunately, he passed away this week. And then Chris Jones still holding out, you know, best player left that's holding out on the defensive side. You mentioned the two offensive studs and Fournette also not signed yet. So now it comes down to, you know, Chris Jones makes that defense go in Kansas City. Without him, that defense is very flawed. And Derek Carr, I mean, I know they're not doing anything in the first preseason game. Derek Carr went up and down the field on him twice in that first preseason game against Kansas City. Chris Jones is a difference maker.
Absolutely, and we'll see, because Carr's going to have to do it without Kamara for the first three games. Who was just, you know, he took that suspension, so he's out 3 games.
Yep.
Any other football news, Darren?
No, I mean, NFL, no. Just college, you know, we're getting ready to start that up soon, too. Georgia looking for the first three-peat since Minnesota did it in the 1930s. So it's been a while since that happened. It's so weird, right, when you look at college football, and we'll talk about it more in a couple of weeks. In my head, I still think Alabama is the best team every year, even though Georgia's won 2 titles in a row. But Alabama is so entrenched in my head that it just stuns me that Georgia is the 2-time defending champ. That's all I'm going to say on that. We'll get more into college football as we get closer to the season.
Okay.
And you'll hear much more about the South Carolina Gamecocks than you expected, as Kevin will talk endlessly about the Cocks. So there we go.
All right. We'll move to baseball in a little bit. What else you got? What else you want to throw around that's happening in the sports world?
Well, the Women's World Cup, right? Pretty exciting. Nobody's watching it. Spain will play England in the final. Vlatko Andonovski has resigned. And when you are the number one seed in the world and your team doesn't get past around the 16, you're either going to get fired or you're going to resign. It's probably the same meeting. We can do it either way you want. We can either fire you or you can resign, whichever way you prefer. But, you know, you do it in Australia, nobody cares. I'm sorry. Nobody really cares. No one's waking up from this crap in this country. If you're a diehard women's fan, you might do it. But if the men's games were in Australia, there'd be a much bigger support around the globe for it.
Oh, absolutely.
It just means more. And it's different sports. I'm not insulting the women. It's just the caliber of play is at a different level. The other soccer point is Messi. He keeps scoring goals, and Miami is in the final of this of the cup that they're up for. Again, this was the last place team in the East in the league before Messi came in. They have not lost since. You know, he's the best player in the world for a reason. So that's the soccer points. Where do you want to go from here?
He's a major difference maker. That's for sure.
No doubt.
I know you wanted to touch on golf, FedEx Cup.
Well, yeah, we knocked out 20, so we're down to the final 50 players.
You got 50.
Yep. Well, they'll be at the Olympia Fields in Illinois this week, starting tomorrow. Listen, it's for a lot of money. It's just not the majors. So, well, because of the way the point system works, you don't win and you still could be in first. It's trying to keep up with the points. You really got to love golf to understand the entire point system. Listen, I enjoy it. I watch it. But I don't even know who's going through it every single week. I have to wait till the results come out to see what's going on and who moved up past who. So it's a little bit tough to follow. But, you know, it makes the end of golf interesting, and they throw a lot of money at these guys. So it's a big deal in that way. Also want to touch on Michael Orr.
Michael Orr.
Gee, you heard the story about the twoies and Michael Orr. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't know what to think anymore. You know, it was so hyped up with the movie, the whole story. Obviously, we're talking about the movie Blindside, and now we're hearing that some of this isn't true.
No, exactly. And there's two different sides of this. You know, the twoies, if you watch the movie, because people make it seem like, oh, they said they adopted them. And they never said that in the movie, you know, so it wasn't like that. But apparently they were making money off him. Michael, you know, Michael Orr did never like the movie coming out about him. Wasn't really into it. It was the old man's friend that wrote the book and the whole thing. Sandra Bullock won the award. He didn't like the way it was portrayed. He was never really into it. He didn't have a great NFL career, but he started for a few years.
Yeah.
The big thing is the twoies, I believe, have a higher net worth than Orr. So I don't know if they needed to steal from him or not. But at the same time, there's two sides of every story. We're going to see how this breaks out. But it's like, you know, that whole magical movie. And you feel like, is none of it true? I mean, what the hell's true on it?
I know.
And it's like people making the royalties off the movie, and their kids are getting money that Michael Orr isn't, and all this other stuff. So it'll be interesting. You know, unfortunately, it also goes across the race lines, which always makes it a little bit more exciting, too, which will create a divide among some people. Not everybody, but some people. But, wow, you take a movie like The Blind Side that's such a great story in a movie presence. You know, everybody kind of enjoyed watching it. And then out of nowhere, you know, the star, so to speak, or the person it's about, claims that he's been getting robbed by this family, and things that were said were not said. This is going to get messy.
Yeah, it's definitely going to get messy. And, you know, it's been so long that the movie's been out that I'm kind of surprised that it took this long for all this to basically come to, you know, a head where all this stuff now is coming out. It's kind of wild. I mean, you would think that based on the fact that it came out, you know, what year it actually came out, but, you know, it came out so long ago that it's not even in people's, you know, heads anymore. You know what I mean? No,
it's not top of mind. It really isn't. You just remember that, oh, this white family was so nice. They adopted this kid that had nowhere to live and was sleeping on the street on a bench and going to high school. And he befriended the little brother and everything was all great. And the sister stood up for him and all this other stuff. And who the hell knows what's made for the movie and what's real and what's not.
2009. So, I mean, it's 14 years that the movie's been out. So, you know, I mean, one would have thought that if all this was going to come out, it would have come out a hell of a lot sooner. But nevertheless, we have to see where this is going to go, man.
Sometimes it takes the right lawyer to convince the right plaintiff to go forward. Whether it's the right way or the wrong way, I can't tell you, but that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of messed up situations, just sliding the baseball for a second. Wander Franco, you're making all this money. You're a superstar. Can we stop with the underage girls, fellas? What is this, Louis Polonia all over again? I shouldn't have to put up with this crap. You know, my God, as the father of a 17-year-old, you're the father of an 18-year-old. I mean, is Gianna 19 now, right? But yeah. It's like, come on, man. I mean, but think about it 2 years ago. 3 years ago. You're like, what the hell are you doing? It's like, come on. You have to be able to find a woman in their early 20s that's going to give you everything you want. Life that you and I can't even speak about, G. We were not celebrity all-star baseball players. But, wow. I mean, what the hell are you doing, kid? And when MLB is suspending you, you know, put you on leave, you know that they know something.
And listen, Franco is 22. And, you know, the two ages that we've heard allegedly are a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. And it's just, I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's unbelievable that you know, he's 22. I mean, that's a huge age difference. It's not 19 and 22. You know what I mean? It's 14. I mean, come on.
My youngest daughter is 14. I grant you special needs the whole thing, but nonetheless.
It's unbelievable.
I just can't fathom it. It's just like, come on, man. Use your head. So whoever's working with this kid, whoever's his handler, freaking come on, talk to this idiot. What the hell? You're going to throw away a career so you can be with a 14-year-old? What the hell's wrong with you? You're a pedophile. There's no other way to put it. You're a freaking pedophile. You're a slob.
It's unbelievable. It really is.
As we segue into baseball.
Well, Tampa's dealing with that. And they're also dealing with the fact that McClanahan is done for the year.
And probably for next year, too. Probably for next year, too, now.
He needs Tommy John, and basically it's the end of this year and the end of next year, too. So much for my fantasy value of having him as a sixth-round keeper. That seems to be out the window at this point.
Looks like he'll be released, and you'll try to grab him in the 22nd round next year.
Yeah. So, American League at this moment, before today's games, we got Baltimore leading the East, Minnesota leading the Central, Texas leading the West. Wild cards at the moment are Tampa Bay, Houston, Toronto. Seattle's about two out. Boston's about three out. And then the Yankees are 6.5 out of the last wild card spot.
This Yankee team. They're below 500 now.
It's become a season of a disaster.
This entire season's been a joke, G. This is an unwatchable team.
And can you imagine if we got nothing out of Gerrit Cole? I mean, Gerrit Cole is unbelievable. He's probably going to be the favorite to win the Cy Young, and still got nothing from this team.
He's the best pitcher in the American League by far. And you know, and he throws he battles last week, throws a real solid game. And the bullpen blows a 4-run lead in the ninth. Because that bullpen, which we've been talking about all year. Listen, if Cashman and or Boone are back next year, it's pathetic. That means that Hal just does not care about winning. Hal simply does not care. Because the simple fact of the matter is 2009 is a long time ago, as we just talked about with the blind side. 14 years for the Yankees to be this non-competitive is ridiculous. Oh yeah, they made it to the finals, the championship series a couple times against the Astros, but they were never close to winning it. You never felt like they were going to win either of those series. This is not. I mean, listen, I'm not going to crush Cashman for the starting pitching because you don't expect Cortez to go down and Rodon to go down and Herman to have a fit and Severino to regress that badly. So four of the guys he was banking on fell apart, not to mention the stupid trade he made for Montas last year, who really showed nothing. So you had five guys basically behind Cole, and none of them gave you anything, okay? So whatever. But now you sit there and you know that this bullpen was not up to par. You know the offense is not up to par. What the hell are you doing? And if Hal, honestly, if Hal keeps them, if Hal keeps these guys, either one of them, then he is just about keeping the thing going and the money train, and he does not care about winning or the Yankee fans or the tradition at all, because this is the pathetic. I'd rather him sell the team than do this crap.
And I'm gonna tell you honestly, I think one is gonna go and one is gonna stay, and I'm completely against this. I think they need a change. They need some new voices. You know, what they're doing right now just isn't working. And this season specifically, the everyday lineup is just, it's just not working. And how they put this together just isn't working at all. And it needs to be redone. You know, the latest Twitter thing I saw was, by the way, did you know that September 9th is Yankee Old Timers Day? And for the first time, Derek Jeter will be in uniform. And the one of the tweets that I saw this week was that he may be one of the favorites to be the new general manager if Cashman isn't here. I don't know if I like it. I don't know if I don't like it. But I think Cashman's got to go. I think they need some new voices. I think you really need to do some cleaning of what this team is right now and try to put something else together that actually works, because this definitely is not going to work.
You give me Jeter and Mattingly in those roles, and even though there's no proof behind Jeter being able to be a GM and Mattingly hasn't won anything as a manager, I'll take guys that have the winning tradition and that have been lifers and love the pinstripes more than I'll take what we have here.
Listen, I'll take it for 2 years, because at this rate, this team that we have put together right now is not going to do anything. I mean, you know, we talked about it before, but you know, there are problems here that they're not going to get out from. They're not going to get out from under these problems in 10 minutes. I mean, they need to fix this everyday lineup. And listen, it's very difficult when you're the Yankees to rebuild. You can do it every once in a while on the fly, but it's almost impossible to rebuild with the way that this team is and the way the money-generating season happens. But, I mean, this is something that's going to have to get redone, because it's horrible right now. You've said this. It's unwatchable.
They had one hit last night. They got shut out again tonight. I mean, listen, nothing against what was it, Elder last night. Nothing against Charlie Morton. They're nice pitchers. Elder's okay. He's young, but come on. I mean, you can't be getting shut out back to back nights. It's a sad state of affairs. And the thing about this team is, Cashman's living off a championship in 2009 and the early ones, but B, the trade deadline in 2016, where everybody went crazy that he was able to get and re-sign Chapman after dealing him and all that other stuff. But fact of the matter is, most of the prospects we got back in those deals didn't do crap. So let's, but before we sit there breaking our arms, patting ourselves on the back, Gleyber Torres is the only one that's been anything. All right, McKinney's been awesome.
You don't like Clint Frazier anymore?
Well, listen, I like Clint Frazier. He got hurt a lot. They never gave him much of a chance. They didn't like him as much as I did. I thought his bat at least was alive, but they didn't like him, so he didn't play. So whatever. Nope. Justin Sheffield turned into nothing. I mean, this has been these were the guys we were hearing about. Oh, look what they did. Oh, I mean, yep. Cashman's living off this crap like he did something special. That was 7 freaking years ago.
It's unbelievable.
And this team is now, we're a Yankee team. We had Mariano. We had the greatest closer of all time. We don't have a closer.
No.
We don't have a freaking closer. We got a bunch of setup guys. We don't have an offense. The only way Ohtani comes to this team is if he loves Judge. Only way. If he just says, I want to play with Aaron Judge. Only way that happens. And you know what? It didn't work with Trout, so why would he think it would work with Judge? He'd rather be on a team that wins. He'll stay with the Dodgers. Maybe come to the Mets, even though they're not showing much this year. But, you know, there's unless he has this admiration for Judge, there's no way this guy comes here.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it would be Judge and the pinstripes that would lure him here. That's it. There's nothing else. There's nothing. They have nothing going in any direction that would show you that they're going to be a winning team next year. I mean, I can't see them being a winning team next year. You would need wholesale changes to be a winning team next year at this
point. You want to start Ohtani? Hire his Japanese manager that he loved. Let him be the first Japanese man here in this country, in the States, and maybe he lures him. I can't think of another way you get him. I really can't.
That's actually a great idea, I have to tell you.
I do I like it in a heartbeat. That. I do it. I hire the entire staff. If he liked them, bring him in. Hire the announcers too. I don't care what you do. But the simple fact is this team has become unwatchable.
Yeah.
Mets, they flat out quit against the Braves. They won the final game. I'll give them that. 21-3 against the Braves at home, getting swept in that doubleheader. Wow. I mean, these two teams, you can't watch them. You can't freaking watch these two teams. The Mets basically give up. I mean, if Buck is here next year, it would equally be a travesty. Well, you need someone to bring. They quit on this guy. They haven't done shit for him all year.
Yeah, I mean, because he hasn't been here long enough, I'm not surprised if he winds up staying. At this point, though, you know, on the other side, I want Boone and Cashman out. But I don't know. I think you're right. I think the Mets probably do need another voice as manager, but I don't know if that has to happen for them to start turning stuff around. Whereas with the Yankees, it has to happen. I mean, if it doesn't, we have a huge problem here.
Well, the Mets have a nucleus. The Yankees don't.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it comes down to. The Mets have guys that you expect. That's why them quitting like they are is disgusting, because they have a nucleus. The Yankees have nothing.
Yeah. In the NL, Atlanta, Milwaukee, and the Dodgers are all leading their divisions. Philadelphia, San Francisco, Miami. The Cubs and Cincinnati and Arizona are all within two games of the last wild card spot, so that's going to be a little fight. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. Only three or four games really separate those teams. In fact, three or four games really separate all the wild card spots. Philadelphia, San Francisco, Miami, you know, Cincinnati. It's five games in any direction, and those teams could flip all the way over the place. So
the only team that was playing good was the Cubs.
Yeah.
And then Stroman went down. So now he's got cartilage issues. So you don't know what he's going to do. And he's, I mean, Steele's been their best pitcher, but Stroman's been kind of the leader of that staff. So that's a big blow for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Bellinger has a rebirth. He went from being traded to being an untouchable now again, like he was that one year with the Dodgers where he could do no wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we're going to see some interesting things going on in this pennant race. It's just unfortunate that with the Mets and the Yankees, we're not going to be in a pennant race. Even the Padres are not in a pennant race. So I have the three teams that I follow, none of them are in the race.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was thinking about this the other day. You know, usually if you're baseball, you want, and the networks, you want some of the big teams in here. You want them competing. You want them in the playoffs. You want good numbers in the playoffs. At this moment, you will have no Yankees, no Mets, no Red Sox. You're not going to have the Angels with Ohtani and Trout, right? In the National League, you got no St. Louis Cardinals, which is usually a big, big TV draw in the Midwest. You got no Padres. I mean, this is turning into like a disaster for baseball. I mean, listen, the only way this works is if somehow the networks get Braves Dodgers in the National League Finals.
I think the Cubs making it makes a little bit of a help on the National League. And I think if the Red Sox found a way, it would help the American League.
Correct. And in the American League, you know, I guess the networks are probably rooting for Houston based on the prior, you know, 10 years of them winning. But after Houston, I mean, you know, unless you're going to tie the boat to the Orioles, there's no huge TV draws in this group.
Well, Texas is a big market. Dallas is a big market, right? So Dallas and Minnesota is not going to draw flies, okay? Yep. Tampa doesn't draw flies. They can't even fill up their stadium. Baltimore is not going to have anybody interested, even though they have nice young talent. You just don't know what you're going to get out of it. So it all comes down to that West. Toronto, I still think Toronto could win that division. I still think they had the most talent in that division. I picked them in the beginning, so maybe I'm biased. I you know, obviously Bichette going down hurt my may hurt my chances, but I think Tampa Bay's battling a lot of stuff. And I think that Baltimore, I don't love the pitching on Baltimore. It's been better than I thought, but I don't love the pitching. So, but Toronto certainly doesn't help with a draw. I mean, you know, I mean, Seattle doesn't help with a draw. You know, there's not a lot out there. They need the Red Sox. You know, they thought the White Sox were going to be competitive this year.
Absolutely.
And no, they got none of that.
Listen, like you said, if they somehow got Boston and the Cubs in there, that would definitely help the ratings for sure. But, you know, the fact that they got no Yankees, no Mets, no Padres, no, you know, there are a lot of teams that are just out of this playoffs. I mean, the Phillies probably help a little bit.
It does. Philly's a big market. It's a big market.
But I mean, no Yankees. I mean, the Angels with Ohtani and Trout not being in it doesn't help either. You know, they got no big draw with either one of those in the playoffs. You know, the Padres, no Tatis, no Soto. I mean, there are a lot of teams with a lot of stars that are just not – they are out. So
I just want you to picture this. Okay, we get through the wild card, and the American League is the Twins against the Orioles and Tampa against Toronto.
Ratings are horrible at that point.
Is anybody saying, oh, I can't wait to catch Twins O's? Is anyone saying, wow? I mean, listen, the odds of the Astros and the Rangers both getting knocked out are slim, let's be honest. But I'm just saying.
But it can happen, Darren.
But I'm just saying, imagine that, or just one of those series. Listen, the only thing that saves them right now with the way it's set up is if it happens to be where Texas plays Houston, because at least you have the Battle of Texas. They may not like each other. That's it. The rest of the crap means nothing. In the National League, they have the Dodgers, they have the Braves. I mean, but, you know, they want the Cubs. They don't want the Brewers.
Yeah.
Do you want to watch a series with the Brewers?
And if you're the networks, you also want Philly in there.
Absolutely. You need Philly in there over the other wild cards. You don't even care about the Giants. There's nobody to watch on the Giants. And Arizona, nice young talent like Baltimore, nobody knows who they are. They might have seen Zach Allen in box scores, but they don't know who he is.
And what happens
if Allen's going to be rookie of the year, but they don't know who he is.
What happens if Miami gets in there?
Miami, yeah. I mean, listen, just trust me on this. Miami, the Heat, the Panthers, and right now, I'm scared for the Dolphins, but right now, the Marlins are in there. Every now and again, a city has a really strong playoff year.
Yeah.
Philly had it. Now it could be Miami's turn. I'm just saying.
Definitely could be based on what we're looking at. And you'd also have Tampa Bay in there for the playoffs, at least. Another Florida team. It's gonna get a little wacky, I'll tell you.
We have a bunch of teams that don't sell out their own stadiums.
Yeah.
They're going to make the playoffs. Tampa doesn't. Florida doesn't. Okay. Atlanta used to struggle selling out their stadium. You know, the Arizona is not selling out their stadium. The Rangers haven't in years. Maybe they'll start now. Baltimore hasn't in years. Maybe they're starting to now. But these are not. Toronto doesn't sell out. I mean, nope. These are not rabid fan bases.
No, they're
just not. Reds won tonight. Giants lost tonight. Cubs are losing in the eighth. Marlins got blown out. Phillies won. Diamondbacks won. So we'll see what that does for the end. Right now, the Padres lead the Orioles 3-1. So see what happens there. But yeah. But baseball is coming down to the wire. We, though, we're going to be talking some fantasy, you and I, soon. Kev might or might not join us for the special fantasy show. It's up to him. But we'll see if Kev does not join us, we might have a special guest join us as well. And then we also have an NFL preview coming up soon.
Definitely.
And a little bit of a college preview. Nothing substantial, I promise. But, you know, anything else you want to touch on before we wrap this show up?
No, that's it. I think tonight's a wrap.
Well, my voice is shot, but we're working on it. You are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Gino, Kevin, On assignment. Nah, he's down in South Carolina. He's
on assignment.
He's out with the family. But talk about the wonderful world of sports. You know, hope you enjoy the show. We certainly enjoy doing it. Hope you enjoy listening to it. You can download the show anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. And, you know, share it. You know, we posting some things on Facebook from time to time. Like them, share them. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want us to talk about more.
Pass it along to your friends.
Yes, pass it along. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.